Welcome to the 27th Annual Executive War College, produced by the Dark Intelligence Group, April 27th and 28th, 2022, in New Orleans. The title of this presentation is How the Pandemic Permanently Changes the Way Lab Buyers Respond to Marketing Messages and Make Buying Decisions.
Just a little bit about me. My marketing background has been primarily in product launch, product management. I was the vice president of product management with Sunquest years ago, over their laboratory and radiology businesses. And then I moved on to Sysmex, if any of you know Sysmex and their wonderful hematology equipment. And so I was in charge of their middleware solution. We started at one, and we grew it to over 1,000 hospital users. So we know a little bit about what it looks like to go from nothing and have to market and bring something to the market and grow it over time. So that's my background, and I'm really delighted to be here with you today, and thank you for having both of us.
Hi, my name's Deborah Harsh. I am the founder and CEO of Brandwidth Solutions, and we're a marketing communications firm that specializes in healthcare diagnostics, contract pharma, life science, and technology. My background started in sales. I carried a bag for a lot of years. I sold chemistry analyzers and cell counters to the physician and vet market through distributors, and then moved into developing the calibrating systems that went inside of a lot of medical devices, especially pulmonary function instruments and blood gas analyzers. From there, I went on to be a director of marketing at a life science company, Mettler Toledo, and then moved into being the director of marketing at a software company that got acquired by Thermo. 2 months after I started, and while it was great working at Thermo, I really had thought about starting this company way before because I really felt like there was a missing piece between understanding that lab person that you actually talk to versus just doing wonderful creative. So I wanted to bring it together to make a better situation. So we know that the pandemic hit, and it's been the longest, shortest 2 years of our lives, and I don't know that we're quite all the way through it. I know it's an endemic now or whatever you want to call it, but we're all exhausted. So what happened? The world changed in 2020-21. You couldn't get in. The hospitals were closed. Vendors couldn't get in. Service people struggled to get in, but they had to get in to fix any kind of instrumentation. So the world changed. So we had to find a better way to do things or a different way to do things. And these are a couple of examples. So you Zoomed with your customers, with your lab directors, and you Zoomed with, you know, the C-suite to get instruments in and deal with issues and getting kits and assays in. And we actually had to find a way to do videos. And we couldn't get into any facility. And this is actually an example of one that we did in a pharma company. Couldn't get in those either. So we literally did it using an iPhone. We did the B-roll on an iPhone. We did the feed roll on an iPhone. And we blended it together because they needed a virtual tour because their customers couldn't get in for audits. So they had to find a way to reach the customer. So this was the solution. We developed all kinds of graphics and things to make people feel like, okay, I'm there. I understand how it works. Now we had to do trade shows different. How do we do a trade show when we can't physically be there? And how do we develop leads? You know, the leads are the lifeblood of sales, right? Marketing's job is to develop leads. So we developed virtual trade shows. But we made sure that those trade shows had some major things in it. We used video. And we used ways of getting literature, videos, and solutions so that when they downloaded it, we got a lead to nurture. We had to do something to gather leads. This was actually a trade show at PitCon, which is a very large life science show. This client walked away with 147 leads. Not bad for physically not being there. Also cost them a lot less not being there. They usually have a very large booth. They didn't have drayage. They didn't have shipping. They didn't have setup. So the videos we created or something they use for marketing throughout and cost them less than actually going to the show. Not saying that they won't be going to the show. They will be.
Yeah, so we also saw a lot of workplace disruption. You've seen it in your organization, perhaps, but we've certainly seen it with customers. And seen a lot of retirements, obviously, and a lot of new and experienced staff. This makes it very difficult for salespeople, makes it very difficult for marketing people, because now there's been this sort of shuffling around, right? And reorganizations, and also certainly in laboratories, hyper-stretched resources. This makes it very difficult for sales and marketing. And we've seen new roles. New roles come along in organizations. How do you market to them? How do you sell to them? So it certainly had an impact on more digital and more video, right? It's also had an interesting impact. There was science done, research done on in-person versus remote selling and the advantages and disadvantages of both. And really, I'm going to show you a couple of McKinsey slides that you've probably already seen, but it talks about how really the customers are wanting to do more self-serve online. They're going to want to do more access to things before they talk to somebody in person. And maybe in person isn't all that we thought it was cracked up to be. And in a number of instances, it's not. I help, for example, a virtual company. It's one of the things I do. And they've been virtual for 20 years. And it was considered a sort of a ding against them before the pandemic. Where's your corporate office? Where are you? Where's your building? Now, of course, it's all the rage. Group selling has started to take off. So rather than a digital chat with one-on-one person, it's more group setting. So this changes the dynamic of sales. Some companies, it may seem, well, this is kind of what we've been doing. But others now are seeing more groups coming into a call, bringing, oh, I want to bring so-and-so. They sort of treat it maybe not as a call, or they may treat it more as a webinar-esque. So how do you leverage that? How do you leverage that with your old selling model versus maybe what you ought to move to is maybe a more group selling model than you had done before, bringing in expertise. So we're seeing that kind of dynamic shift, and it's something to embrace because what we're finding, at least in the McKinsey study, is that more customers want that. They're becoming a lot more comfortable in the B2B space with remote selling than maybe we ever thought. And that the in-person, maybe it is used in a very careful way, in a very judicious way, not the, oh, I'm going to travel here, I'm going to travel here, I'm going to travel here. And so what we're seeing is about customers enjoy, and it's really high numbers, right, in acquiring new customers, 76% are happy with remote and digital sales enablement, digital and marketing access to that kind of information to make decisions. And why? Because it's easier for them as well to schedule, right? It's easier for you to schedule. You can get people into a room sooner. There's a ton of savings on travel, of course. And there's a way, again, to bring in this area of expertise that you wouldn't be able to fly in. I can fly in a couple people. I can't fly in my whole team. Now I can use my whole team and leverage them in a dynamic way that I couldn't before. And I think people really enjoy that. People in the customer setting really appreciate that. And it isn't just the younger generation. We're seeing it across, you know, the generational divide, if you will. So it is pretty exciting. So I want to talk about a little bit of an example. I think a lot of you watch PBS. Any people in here watch PBS? Do you like Ken Burns? Okay. I wanted to try to bring something in that maybe people could relate to. So before the pandemic, and even since the pandemic, we see very staged promotional videos, right? We still see those. People spend a lot of money in putting marketing pieces together using professional videographers. And this is just an example of a tactical element, right? But before the pandemic, this is all you had, right? And these would be individuals that would be beautifully staged. You see the blurred background, right? You see how the lighting is perfect on Ken and on David. And you know, but they're all being interviewed individually. And we're used to that, right? We're used to these individual sound bites. Some poor videographer had to fly into wherever, or these people had to fly in wherever, and they had to be set up, and they had to be organized, and it had to be produced, it had to be staged. That's a lot of work, and it's a lot of money. Very few companies in our space, except for the very large, can really even afford to do video. What, it's 20, 30 grand to do a marketing-type video? And how long does it last? What is the shelf life for video? It's not long. Why? Because our industry is changing all the time. It doesn't matter whether you're a tech or an IT. It doesn't last long. 6 months is the shelf life. Then you have to do it again, or you know, I want to change it. It's not quite current. So today, and this is for the new, I don't know how many of you have seen the Ben Franklin film that Ken just produced, but he still had these PBS still had these promotional videos, right? That I just showed you from 2016, right? But now we've introduced this, right? What's different about this? It's casual, right? What else? Zoom, that's a technology, right? What else? It's a group. That's exactly. It's a group of people. They're having a conversation. What else? It's approachable, right? It's very approachable. It doesn't look produced, right? Which can be good and bad, right? You know, if you're not careful, you know, if it's not choreographed is what you want. But what else do you notice about who is there? Who's at the bottom? Right. Yeah. So Michael Douglas is not in the film. And if you haven't seen it, you wouldn't know. Mandy Patinkin is the voice of Ben Franklin. Of course, we know Ken Burns up on the right. But why is Michael Douglas there? He's there because he's going to play Ben Franklin in an Apple TV Plus series coming up. It's not out yet. But what do you think, and I don't know, I'm not in the entertainment business, right? But what do you think the chances would have been to get Michael Douglas on a Zoom call or on a 2016 flavor produced interview before this situation? It wouldn't have happened. Right? He would have been busy, would have been hard to get, and, oh, I can't be there. But this is either, it's likely his home. He's not in makeup. His hair's a bit disheveled. We think that's kind of interesting for a major mega star, right? And you can see, you know, he doesn't know that even the technique of, hey, move your laptop camera toward you a little bit so that you're not showing your ceiling, right? Okay? You know what I mean? So there's the ceiling hanging out there. Right? But it's okay. We don't mind. And the reason we don't mind, and you can't see the video, we're not going to show it because of time today, but the reason we don't mind is we are completely engrossed in their conversation, right? Ken Burns is an amazing interviewer, and of course he is because he's the filmmaker. But what can we take away from this? What we can take away with from this is something that maybe is less gorgeous, right? But in our industry now, we can produce these things, too. We can get the superstars in the lab industry now. My partner and I produced a series for Robert, a COVID series, twice a week, speakers for twice a week, 111 different sessions, 30 minutes, right? Okay. And it was hard. It's always hard to recruit speakers. This is a hard thing. But why is it important in marketing and sales? Because this is the voice of the customer. These are the voice of thought leaders. This is very important because education is very important in our industry, and that's how we market, through education, right? And so, but we were able to do 110 of these in a year, right? And we could get access to, you know, President of Mayo Labs, Dr. Maurice. He was thrilled to be involved, thrilled. Everybody said yes. Nobody said no. Didn't matter what the organization, just like Michael Douglas. So what's the point of this is that what's changed? Okay, we've gone from in-person to digital, but what about that? What do we get to leverage now? We get to leverage experts. We get to leverage thought leaders. We also get to leverage people in our organization who are passionate about their products, like Ken Burns, right? And knowledgeable, who have that sort of special super skill that nobody knew about and can interview people, right? Who can really engage people. That's something we really didn't think about before. We thought about, okay, who do we have is going to do the demo? You know, who do we have is going to talk about this? This is different. This is conversational. How can we think about doing this to let people in? Because people want to access this information without having to travel somewhere, and they can now do that. So how can we amp that up? So that's just an example of the kinds of things that Deb and I are noticing that, yes, as we transition, you didn't need to come to this room at 8:30 to talk about how we're going to Zoom. We all know that, right? But what can we learn from that? What can we use from that? What are all of you doing with that is one of the questions. I guess in summary for this portion is informal's okay. As long as it's crafted, informal's okay. And that's really nice. We saw people out of the 110 Zoom calls, they came in all shapes and sizes. We had a gal who did it from her car, right? She said, I'm about to go into a hospital, but, you know, I am in the car. We had somebody do it from the hotel room. People dressed up with a tie. One guy with a t-shirt out in his backyard. All credible leaders in the industry, experts in the industry, but it was okay because we were interested in what they were saying, right? We were interested in what they were saying. Personal curated content, high demand. Be thinking about that. But now you can do it in a way that is accessible. You don't need to hire a videographer. Those people are hard to find. And then if you want to find them and they also have graphic skills, good luck, okay? It's just hard. So there's ways you can do these yourselves. These are very immediate, raw experiences. People want it. They like it. It makes me feel like I'm in your living room. It makes me feel like I understand you as a company, as an organization. And it's an easier nowadays. What's happened is the walls have come down. Berlin Wall's down now. And you can get access to experts. We're not finding it to be so difficult, so formidable. So this gives you that enriched opportunity and thought leader engagement. And I think it will open up, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, about the kinds of things that you might want to think about with your customer journey. And so the real question is, how are you going to harness the new normal, this new normal in marketing and sales? How are you going to do that in that B2B space? And Deb's going to take us through one thing we do need to consider.
The best part of the Ken Burns thing is the dead flowers on Ken Burns' dining room table.
I know. Sorry, I forgot to mention that.
Where and when would Ken Burns ever have dead flowers on his table?
I mean, no one's paying attention.
So when we talk about marketing, I often tell clients the biggest mistake some companies make is they don't build out their messaging platform. They don't build out their value proposition, their brand pillars, and the proof points that support them. And that's important because that's everything you do is going to be built around that. And part of that process is to get people through a life cycle. So what changed? Has anything changed since you did it the last time? Maybe you did it before COVID. So what's happened after COVID? Did your customers, your personas' responsibilities change? What are their challenges now? Maybe they're different now than they were before. Maybe they don't have enough staff, whatever it could be. Are they using the same techniques to find information? Perhaps before, and I remember when I was in the DXMA, people in the labs liked paper, right? They liked direct mail because they weren't on email very much. Well, that's not true anymore. What's true now is they get more information in different ways. So you need to be aware of that because that's the journey you need to take your customer to get to buy your products and services. What is the information they need to make a decision? It's not about just presenting, here's my instrument, isn't it great, or here's my solution or my service or my assay. They need more than that to make that decision. And are you ready to take them on that journey to get them to buy your product or service? So we talk about this as a customer life cycle loop. And I'm going to talk about the first half, and Deb's going to talk about the back half. So if we categorize it in three categories, it's aware, consider, and buy. Those are the major categories in a customer's life cycle. And there's pieces in between. So the awareness is, okay, I now know that XYZ company exists. I know that they make some kind of product or service that we could use in our lab. Then they're going to do some research. They're going to find out what's out there. They may go to a peer-reviewed pub. They may go to PubMed. They may go to KOLs. They may ask others in their industry. They may ask people that they work with. Then they're going to do the consideration. They're going to take all the data. Remember, these are scientists. They deal with data every day. They look at things based on data. They do their homework. Think about when you go to make a big purchase. Make it personal. When you go to make a big purchase like a car, you just don't walk into a dealership and say, oh, that one's pretty. I'll take it. You do a little homework. What's the maintenance record? How good is it? Is it going to last me a long time? What's the gas mileage, especially now? Is it going to take care of everything I need? Can it transport the goods in my family that I need? Is it big enough? Is it small enough? They do the same thing. They do the same thing. They're human. They do their homework. Then they do the consideration phase. They look at all the data they have gathered, some of it from you and some of it from your competitors. Then they make a selection to buy. So this is why the next piece is so important, developing a customer persona. Now, I understand that we're going to take you through one customer persona. But I understand that sometimes a decision has multiples, especially like in software. You may have the IT person in the hospital that might be part of it. But this is just one persona. If you have multiple personas in your buying decision, you have to do that however many personas you have that are going to be part of that decision. Some of them are very similar. Some of them are not. Their needs are different. So this is Kelly. Kelly runs the lab. She's the clinical chemistry manager. And in her role, it's not her job to experiment with different kinds of technology. She needs a solution that's going to solve a problem. She has a patient, she has patient samples, she has to solve a problem. So let's talk a little bit about Kelly. And again, this could be, it doesn't matter if it's a woman or a man, this is just, you map them out how you want. She has a PhD, probably in clinical chemistry. She's willing to bring new technologies as long as they're proven and they're approved. She's not a risk taker. She's not part of that Jeffrey Murphy's bell curve with the early adopters and the innovators. She's in the mainstream. She needs a solution that's approved and can work. What's your situation profile? Well, she's got 5 to 10 med techs she works with. They have clinical testing problem that they have to fix. They share findings with other labs, and you've heard of that a little bit over the last day. Sometimes they work with LDTs. Sometimes they're not so interested in doing LDTs. The hospital CFO feels that the lab is part of his cash cow. They generate revenue. So how many tests are you going to do? Is this something you want to buy? What's going to be the outcome for me? She's got to have all that data. And then the decision on the new technology will be reinforced by the revenue it can bring in and that it solves the problem she has and it's approved, because Kelly's not into trying innovative things that are not approved. She's not a risk taker. And you have to remember that persona. You will have people in hospitals that are the early adopters and the innovators. That's not this particular persona. What's her challenge? Her challenge is always time. How many times do you hear that when you go into a lab? I don't have time. We're overworked. We can't get all of this done. They have to find a solution to a particular problem. And they contact other labs to ask what they're doing. How are you doing this? Find out what her goals are. You kind of do it. So typically when we do this exercise, we do it with the business development people and the marketing people, because your sales and business development people talk to laboratorians and this persona all the time. They hear their angst. They hear what their challenges are. Sometimes you could bring a customer in if that makes sense, but usually this is done as an internal workshop. And then you have to find out what motivates Kelly, because that's all going to be part of the assets you build to take them on that journey. Forbes had a great quote, because a lot of people forget the reason for the journey. And it's actually a way to visualize your customer, and it's a way that they interact with your business, as well as a goal. When you map it out, you're taking them with you. You're removing the obstacles to get from aware to consider to buy. The end goal is always the sale. Now, I don't expect everybody to read this, because there's a lot on this slide. And I'm not a big fan of a lot of things on slides, but there's no other way I could map this out. But if you just look at the axes, you get the understanding of where we are. So we're aware, consider, decision, validation. And then you have to figure out how the persona is dealing with it. What are they thinking? What are they going to do? How do they feel? Because you want to get them to the point where they've made the decision. You want them to feel satisfied. But you'll see that there's a lot of obstacles along the way. She knows she has a problem, Kelly. This is still Kelly, right? I have to get this done. I have all these things that are going on with the CFO wanting to know how many samples I can get, the answers. So how am I getting there? What are the KOL saying in the space? We've done this for quite a few clients where we actually build out a KOL deck and then a webinar deck from it. And it's not the company talking. It is leaders in the industry. Remember, Kelly is risk averse. So we have to get her there knowing that, oh, wow, these people are thought leaders. They understand. So what is she going to do? She's going to go to PubMed. She's going to read publications. She's going to search engine it. And she feels frustrated because I got to fix this problem. Then the next thing is, how do they get to consider? What are the regulatory bodies that have approved this or not approved? Is there a CPT code? Is it an LDT? Am I going to get pushback on the LDT from payers? Patients are relying on us. Still in that think mode. Then she's going to the do. What am I going to do? I'm going to go to trade shows. I'm going to listen to some vendors. I'm going to do some research. And then she's feeling optimistic because she's seeing some solutions out there. Now she moves to the decision phase. The product is what we need. It fits the space. It will work in our lab. It doesn't disrupt our workflow. So we're getting her on this journey to get to buy. And that's the goal of a journey. So now the next question is, what am I going to use to take her on this journey? And these are all the tools in our toolbox as marketers. These are all the tools in our toolbox. But you see this blue bar in the center that says integrated marketing? This is the most important part of this slide. because nothing is in isolation. You don't create social media in isolation. You don't create advertising in isolation. You don't create public relations in isolation. Everything is integrated, because if you integrate it well, it will cost you less money to market. And if you've done your homework on your messaging platform, you already know how to do it. It's already laid out. You've made a nice roadmap. My favorite thing lately has been, I want to do social media because that's going to get me in front of the customer. It is going to get you in front of the customer. Very little gets bought on social media. I mean, they're not going to buy an $800,000 mass spec from social media. They're just not going to do it. But you'll notice that I always talk about social media like a tree. And it's a really important thing to say. When we do social media with a client, we actually do a program. We do a whole research phase. Remember, data, data, data. We're all scientists in this room. We do a whole research phase. So we know where we're marketing, how we're marketing, who we're marketing to. We've done the persona, right? We understand where Kelly, how the journey is, and how we have to take Kelly on that journey. So now we look at social media. It's not just about posting on LinkedIn or Twitter or whatever social media channel that you particularly use. It's about developing a program where it's content rich. So we always encourage our clients to create a blog. So I always discuss, my graphic designer did this because I keep telling the story of the analogy of the tree. So she said, why don't we just give you a tree? And I said, thank you very much. So the blog is your tree trunk, right? That's the mainstay of all your social media. Everything feeds back to your website, which the blog is housed on. The blog does two things. It enriches your SEO for your website. It keeps your website refreshed regularly, and the web spiders love that. And it's a place for you to use to branch out, no pun intended, to all of your social media channels. But there's a really important piece at the bottom, and it's this. Blogs and social media does not work without a set of roots. Without the roots, you have nothing. What are you talking about? People do not respond to promotional stuff in our space. They respond to thought leadership pieces. Put yourself on the mark. You're the thought leader in the industry. You're the one that's going to be talking about how things should function. You're the one Kelly's going to go to when she needs to make her decision or find more information. Because at the end of the day, it's about making the sale. And the roots have lots of things. It has articles. It has press releases. It has application notes and podcasts and videos and brochures and white papers and case studies. We had an interesting situation. Everybody tells you, don't market in the month of August. No one's paying attention. Especially in Europe, they've gone to sleep. So we had a campaign, and this was actually for a pharma company, about pediatric dosage sizing. And we ran a campaign in August, which is the no-no month. And they had 900 hits on the landing page. 900 hits when everybody told me, you don't market in August. Clearly, people have shifted. They have to understand more. But what was really fascinating to me when I was looking at the data, because it is all about data, and all these things enable you to collect data and know how to market, is that they had a choice of a white paper or a case study. In the case of the white paper, they had a register for it. In the case of the case study, they did not. We had more registrations or more hits or more downloads of the case study than the white paper. And I really wasn't upset by that. Yes, I didn't get to capture a lead because it was a white paper that they'd have to register for, so I didn't have a lead. The case study was free. But I created awareness in the market. What astounded me is 6 months after we ran this campaign, all the big guys like Catalent started running a pediatric dosage campaign. I said, so clearly we hit a mark. From that campaign, this particular client in 9 months, they got 20 opportunities. And of those 20 opportunities, 10 of them became real leads. 5 were sales, and 5 were pending. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, perhaps, but their normal deal was $5 million. So you have to put it in perspective. And pediatric dosage is a specific, like an orphan drug, right? It's not a huge market. But when we ran the campaign at a trade show, first year CPHI kicked off, the client said to me, oh, print ads don't work. 5 people walked in with the print ad and said, we need a CDA. That's the purpose. It's creating that awareness and building that thought leadership. When you build a campaign or when you do social media, the stuff at the bottom is really important. And the really cool thing about the stuff on the bottom is you get to use it over and over and over again. So I wanted to talk about 2 digital campaigns, because that's another thing that Dev and I hear about a lot. Oh, we're going to do digital. We're going to do digital. So this is fictitious, because our clients don't do this. But we ran a print ad, and there's a digital ad that matched. And it drove them, this is again fictitious, to a website. Well, in all honesty, it's not going to do a lot. Because think about it. Even in the print ad with all this copy, you have not finished your marketing message. To send somebody to your website or a product page, you A, have lost an opportunity to continue your marketing message. You've lost that opportunity to take Kelly on that journey. You created the awareness, but how do you get her to consider? And you've lost the opportunity because you dropped them on a product page. So you get to the product page and you go, okay, what am I supposed to do? Now think about it as if you're the consumer. You know how you click on an ad and you get there and you're like, why am I here? I don't know how I got here. What do they want me to do? You don't want your customer to feel like that. Because especially in the day and age when we have only digital marketing or we can't physically get in, and we are getting in now, but you want to make sure you gain every opportunity. You want to make sure you get where you need to get. So this is the right way to do a campaign. Again, both the print ad and the digital. And you see these pages over here? These are landing pages. So when they clicked on it, it goes right to the landing page. And because we are scientists and because we are data-driven, we're going to look at the data from this and we're going to know what they're doing. We're using a marketing automation platform now. We aren't playing in a website just on a landing page. And when we do these ads, we build a page for every single ad, every single issue, in every single publication. Because at the end of the quarter, when we're tabulating the marketing results, I know how to match things, the spend to the value, what we got out of it. This particular client is a software company. In their other side, I'm not going to give you LIS data, but on their other side, last year we generated over 4,000 leads and over 400 requests for demo in a year. So it's very doable because at the end of the day, you want to get them from a marketing lead to a sales lead. And once they hit the I want a demo, you are now at the sales lead part. Oh, and I just want to go because Deb's going to take over now. But I want to talk about all the pages on the back end. So the really wonderful thing about marketing automation platforms is they're automated. That automated word is important. So that when the lead comes in, they download, they write down the white paper, you capture the lead. Now what? What are you going to do with it? You could send it to the CRM, and that's fine, but what are you going to do with it in marketing? Because once it goes to the CRM, it's going to the sales force. What's marketing going to do? This is a nurture campaign that backed up these ads. So the nurture campaign is built at the time you develop the ad campaign. You have the first nurture. It could be a white paper, an app note, case study, whatever it is, and they have the right to download. You already have their name, so you don't need them to register anymore. You already know who they are. Let's say it goes out and you get a 30% open rate. What happens to the other 70%? Automation. That email nurture is going to have a new subject line the next week or 2 weeks later, whatever you program. And it's going to be the same information, so you're not recreating wheels, but you're changing the subject line. Because sometimes people miss it in their inbox. How many times do you open your email bin and you're like, oh my God, I'm never going to get to all this? So you're giving them the opportunity to download again. The cool thing about automation platforms is it's counting it. It's registering how many times they have opened something of yours. It's moving it up, it's scoring it and moving it up from a marketing qualified lead to a sales qualified lead. So your sales team is saying, okay, XYZ Hospital, they received the white paper, they got an application note, they got a poster, they got a case study. You know what they have as you're walking in. There's nothing more important to a salesperson, at least in my view, as I know what they've already touched and seen, so I know what's interesting to them. That's the purpose of nurture campaigns. The other piece of these automation platforms is they stitch code in your website. So when that customer goes to your website, remember, we're doing research, it recognizes them, and it's another score. So, and you set your scores at a level. So for some clients, it's 30. When Marketo, for instance, scores 5 points a touch, at 30, it goes to the sales guy. This customer has taken 5 pieces of information from us or 5 touches from us. These are the things they've touched. It automatically sends them a report. It's not something marketing has to physically do. It automatically sends it based on the client or the area or the territory. So now we need to talk about what happens on the backside. And I'm going to let my partner in crime here.
Partner in crime, the other Deb.
Take it over.
I want to say one more thing about Deb's beautiful slide here. Most companies seem to do these things individually in vacuum. Oh, we're going to run an ad. Oh, we got this deadline with CAP today. We got to put this ad in. Okay, that's real life. We know that's real life. what you want to do when you're leading marketing is you're going to have those crises. You want to start to minimize those crises, right? You want to start to build campaigns because ultimately this is where you want to go. It's integrated, it's working for you, and you get then your product people. I ran marketing communications at Sysmex, and we were always thinking about who the customer is and that journey. That's the reason they have 80%+ market share, okay? Not because of me, but because it was thought about as a holistic client. Which were all the personas? Do that work. People don't do it. They say, oh, we need digital. We need to do an ad. We need to do an event. We need to do a webinar. Those are tactical executions. They're not a strategy. What's great about Deb's slide here is this is a strategy, and it's following the life of her persona. Or maybe it's more than one persona. And that's the other tricky thing is every company wants, well, can't we just make this work for everybody?
No.
Be very careful and try to resist that. Okay, so another thing we did at Sysmex is we looked at interactions with customers in this loop. And we came out with a graph that was like a canoe. So you had very high sales touch, high marketing touch at the top and at the bottom. So it didn't. The circle doesn't show the canoe very well. But the idea was that in the middle part, this back end, it just took a dip. So the whole thing looked like a canoe. So you had high touch at the beginning and then and not so much. Okay, we saw them at a user group meeting or we saw them at AACC or whatever. But then you come back up again. Oh, the contract's coming up for renewal. I got to get it back out there. We got to start, you know, talking to our customers. Very normal, nothing really wrong with it. But in today's market, the challenges are really acute. The competition's acute. The personas are more varied. Things are a little more difficult. And so you need to really think about this back end, as Deb's described, of the customer lifecycle loop. How are you going to keep them satisfied, not just through your service organization? How's the marketing organization to keep them satisfied? And their, and retention and loyalty, because you do want your salespeople to get back in and hunt, but how are you going to make them advocates? How are you going to work that back end to your advantage to keep it sticky? Because it's a lot less expensive to keep your customers overall than it is to continually to hunt for new ones.
And remember, we talked about Kelly reaching out to other laboratories. There's your advocate.
Right.
Kelly saying to hospital XYZ, you know, I've been using Sysmex or I've been using something here. And what's happening then?
Right.
You know, I now know how it works. And this is how it works in my workflow. And this is how my techs feel about it. This back end is as important as the front end, but we mm-hmm. don't tend to pay attention to it. We say, oh, well, maybe not so much. It's, you know, it's mm-hmm. the back end. We've already got the sale, so we've got the customer. But you need more than that. You need that customer to be your KOL, to be your champion in other places.
Right. And you know, advocacy is another area. Sunquest in their day, the 90s, had a legendary user group meeting. Legendary, okay? And that was all about advocacy. Yeah. Advocacy is not just, oh, I have a use case on this important customer and that's advocacy. Okay, that's a use case. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how do you create a cult marketing organization like a Harley Davidson, and you watch the Harley Davidson riders who actually get tattoos of the Harley Davidson logo on their bodies, right? That's cult marketing, right? Or in the old days of Apple, right? When people would come and actually, can I just like, you know, volunteer for a day, help out? I mean, who does this, right? So you want to think about that because that's what binds. That's what binds. And I will say even today, and I'm no longer with Sysmex, I'll get on a call with people in the lab. What do you use for this? What do you use for that? They don't say, I use Sysmex. They say, oh, we love our Sysmex. Okay. That's what you're looking for, right? So we'll just quickly go through this. So how to accelerate those back-end interactions digitally, there are a lot of things. Some of these are more expensive than others. Watch out for e-commerce. That's going to grow over time. It could be you're looking at how to engage people to buy services from you, not necessarily products. Think creatively, but e-commerce is certainly coming. I mean, it's here, but it's going to come in a big way, okay? People want more self-serve, and they want to be treated in a way that they can help themselves. So think about that. Think about sales enablement tools, systems. As you build a lot of content, and digital requires lots of content, meaningful content, not just stuff, but meaningful content that, as Deb points out, is going to carry that persona through her journey, right? So how are you going to get that to your sales organization? Well, the electronically sales enablement tools are very good, a way for marketing to keep current materials at the grasp of a sales organization. Think about onboarding. What do you use for onboarding customers, and how is that a concierge service perhaps, and how is that a way to not just teach them through your LMS, but also how can you continue to market and continue to educate them through that? And how do we integrate all of these together through your website? How are you thinking about it? You may not have all these now, but now's a good time because they're hungry, right? They're hungry for this change has tweaked them, your buyers, and they're kind of interested in how to do this digitally and they're being receptive to it. How can we amp that up? How can we amp that up so it's not just about social, it's about that customer experience and integrating that so you're taking care of them. And you learn that along the way on that back end of the journey, that will help inform the front end of the journey, right?
And you're watching all the data. You're looking at the website. You're seeing where they're going. You see how they're coming in. Are they using mobile? Are they using desktops? All of that data is important as you map out the customer's journey. And you'll find things shift. There'll be times things will shift from less mobile to more mobile. You just have to watch the data. You want to make sure every platform you're on is super mobile friendly because Google will ding you in a way you have never been dinged in your life.
Right.
So it's really important that you do make sure that everything is search engine friendly. And that's where that blog comes into that, social media, because it keeps your website current. It enables you to keep them on their journey.
Yep. No, you're right. So think about those sales plays. Think about what you're using now as your sales plays, looking at analytics, and just to echo what Deb is saying, data is extremely important, always has been. When has it not been important to marketing, right? But now you have a way to put programs in digitally that'll let you count, that'll let you analyze, and you want to do that in as big a way as you can. The blended remote in person, it's what's going to happen. Be careful not to slide back to the old days. That may not actually benefit your organization to sell more. Okay, so watch the in person. Watch that. See how you calibrate that. And leverage your experts. Leverage different experts too, not just scientific experts, perhaps. But also people who can resonate with your personas, people who can meet them halfway, who can carry that message in a digestible way.
And it might be your service person because they're going to interact a lot. They're going to, implement the system. They're going to be in that facility on a regular basis. So you really want to make them part of that conversation because that's part of her journey. How am I going to get serviced? Okay. What does that look like? And how is this going to get installed? So all of that is part of the journey.
And something we could do in another whole presentation is how to avoid dead ends. So I put the request for a demo on here. That's on there because there are a number of pages on websites that it just kind of ends there. It's like, oh, do you want a demo? Click here. And you go and lets you fill something out. And that's all there is. You're at a dead end.
And you haven't earned the right to ask for the demo. Remember the old days when we had Sailing 101 and they talked about trial balloons? We don't have the trial balloon in person. So we've got to meet those trial balloons in whatever content we're delivering to them, because we have to earn the right to request the demo.
That's right.
That's the key.
Okay, well, that's it. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you coming today.
Does anybody have any questions? So if you're a marketing team of one or two people, I would suggest figuring out what your goal is, what your objective is, and who your persona is, and then you'll know how to prioritize. The number one thing I would tell you is do a messaging platform. It'll make your life easier. And then that process in that discovery session of the messaging platform, you'll have other experts in the room with you, other SMEs. So this enables you to figure out what your next step is. And sometimes you'll do bits and pieces and start blending things together. Don't feel overwhelmed. The other choice is hire an agency if you need it. But make sure they play in the space and know the space. Anybody else? Yes. So after you do your persona, how do you get to... How do you make it? What's the process? So that's where everybody's in a room. So you have your subject matter experts that maybe have heard something at a trade show. You have a full team around you, and you start asking a question. We actually use something a whiteboard, and we actually start building it together as a team, and then we move things around with our clients. It's a process. It's literally an exercise, a workshop exercise to get there. It's not that everybody fills out a form. Now, we do know we have some clients where they have Asian colleagues, and they don't want to get on a call like that because maybe there's a language barrier. So we'll do a worksheet for them so they feel more comfortable. But literally, we have done persona workshops with people from Europe, Africa, South America, and North America to build out a persona. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Really appreciate
Thanks
your
for coming.
Attendance.
Thank you.
This concludes the presentation. Mark your calendar for next year's Executive War College to be held April 25th and 26th, 2023 in New Orleans.